Dance Movement Radio. Woman's Movement Radio. Welcome to Woman's Movement Radio Show today. I'm your host, Janae Azenstrauss. I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to our show today. As always, we'll be speaking to women all around the world about their business, love, and lifestyle, bringing you inspiration, motivation, by always aspiring to keep you informed, inspired, and incredibly successful. We have a great show planned for all of you today. When we return, we'll be talking about nice girls still don't get the corner office. Are you a woman who is serious about starting an online business that will allow you to create sustainable wealth and growth? Well, we've done the research. Let us introduce you to some of the best business professionals that have researched numerous business concepts and provide you with great free advice for developing a sustainable business online. Visit us at womensbusinesssourceonline.com. I know many of us women who have worked corporately, you know, we've all made unconscious mistakes in our careers. But have you ever thought that sometimes we're self-sabotaging unconsciously because we've just been conditioned by society not to really want to strive? In a recent album by Beyoncé, in a song called Flawless, Chinamanda Ngozi talks about how women were created or been conditioned by society not to be competitive for careers, but to be competitive against each other. Obviously, competition, as I've spoken about on numerous occasions by doing some research, is not something that human beings were ever supposed to partake in. Competition is actually a construct of the mind. So it leaves a very perplexing question. Why do we self-sabotage our careers? Well, our next guest coming up, Dr. Lois P. Frankel, she actually wrote a book called Nice Girls Still Don't Get the Corner Office. And she's not talking about girls not being nice. What she is talking about is how society has created this perception that women have to behave a certain way in the workplace or just in general. Coming up, such a great conversation and so exciting to talk business, love, and lifestyle with world-renowned author and speaker Lois P. Frankel. Stay tuned, ladies.
The hottest new gel polish just got cooler. Reaction by Gel 2. Color-changing polish that heats up and cools down, transforming your look. 12 temperature-activated colors that evolve with you. For a perfect manicure that strengthens nails, choose Gel 2. What's your reaction?
And we're back. On today's show, we have Dr. Lois P. Frankel. She is a world-renowned speaker and the author of Nice Girls Still Don't Get the Corner Office. She's actually written multiple books, and this one is the one that is a national bestseller, and as she's been featured in the New York Times and multiple different outlets in the United States about this book. Hello, Lois. How are you?
I'm doing well, Janae. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for being on Women's Movement Radio Show today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We're so glad to have you here, and I have to tell you, I'm in love with this book. from the moment that I received it, I have been implementing this into my day-to-day living because, you know, most women have, like, they wake up in the morning, they have their spiritual devotionals, and then they kind of, and we may have, like, affirmations or different mantras that we say throughout the day, but this is almost like a business, like, book that you should read before you start the day in your business.
Well, I like to think so. And you know what people have told me is that you can open it up to any page. And as you said, you can find a mantra, you can find a tip, you can find something you can put to use that day. You know, women have said to me, it's like that was exactly what I needed to know that day.
It's true. And that's exactly how I feel. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask you before we even start deciphering and talking about the book is how did this all start for you? Because you've been in business, obviously, for many years now. And there has to be, what was the turning point of made you wanted to start writing or tapping into your passions?
Well, you know what made me want to write this book in particular, because I had written a couple of other books. One was a coaching book for both men and women. Another one was called Women, Anger, and Depression, Strategies for Self-Empowerment. But this one, I can remember the moment it popped into my head, because I was coaching a vice president of manufacturing in Herndon, Virginia, and I live in Los Angeles. And I'd been working with her for a little while because they thought she was a little bit too aggressive, which, you know what we call those women when we think they're too aggressive. We know what, yep, what men call them anyway.
I've been deemed one of them.
Yeah. And so I went to one of my coaching sessions with her, and she said, before we get started, I just want to let you know that I was invited to sit on the executive committee of my company. And I went to give her a high five, and she stopped me, and I said, what? And she said, I'm not going to do it. And I said, you know, this better be good. And she said, Lois, I've been to those meetings. They're a waste of time. And what popped out of my mouth was, honey, you got to quit being a girl. And it was at that moment that all the mistakes that I'd seen women make, because they are women, start rolling through my head. Like, what guy would not sit on the executive committee of his company because he thought the meetings were a waste of time? As I said to her, they're called meetings. They're not called workings. You go to these meetings to be seen and to see and hear what's going on. And, you know, there's lots of reasons why you go to meetings other than they're productive. But as a woman, she grew up learning that you have to work twice as hard to be considered half as good. And so on the way back from Herndon, Virginia to Los Angeles, I outlined the entire book, my working title was Quit Being a Girl. And then the publisher changed it to Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office.
Well, yeah, and I understand why the publishers did that, right?
Yeah.
But I totally agree with that. And a lot of times I think us as women, it's just because we have so many things already on our plate, and we're always trying to manage multiple schedules, right, if we look at it from a time management. So to take on another responsibility that may not be as what we deem productive is why she was probably saying what she was saying, not realizing that by not attending those meetings, and you're not allowing yourself to be seen, especially if you are the only woman in an executive level management, because ideally that's just really an opportunity to just like sit there and become one of the boys in some aspects, right? So
yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And reading through your book, there are so many numerous points that you brought up that I was so super excited about throughout your book. What do you deem as a nice girl? What do you?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because people who have never read the book tell me that they didn't buy it because they thought the title suggests that you have to be something less than nice. And as I say, nice is necessary for success. It's not sufficient. And so I define a nice girl as one who behaves according to the rules she was taught in childhood were appropriate for little girls, not for adult women. So the whole thing about be nice, be kind, be helpful, don't brag, all those things, you know what, the fact is that those are good messages. Those are fine messages. The problem is, boys may get those messages, but then they also get messages like compete to win, don't let anybody take advantage of you. And so they get the whole picture. We only get half the picture. So that by the time we get to the workplace, we're very nice. People like to work with us. And like your likability quotient is a very important part of your success. But you have to balance those nice girl behaviors with more direct, straightforward, competitive behaviors. And then you've got the whole package. Then you become a winning woman, not just a nice girl.
And I agree with you. You have to be assertive. You don't have to be mean to people, but you do need to be assertive, because in certain aspects you can be taken advantage of. And I've worked with many men, and a lot of men have helped me propel my movement, and they are assertive. They don't have to be, they're not mean, but if they say what they mean, you know, and then no one thinks the rather. And I think a lot of it has to do with, Lois, our societal conditioning as women. I don't know if you would agree, but just how, like you touched upon, how women are raised with certain values. I recently heard a woman speaking, and she talked about how women are not raised. We're raised to be competitive, but not to strive for careers or anything like that, but it's really for the attention of men, which is a different conversation. But it would be nice if we were taught how to be assertive and to not even be competitive from an egotistical place, but to be aggressive enough to seek out the things that we want without feeling guilty. Because that's another thing that you talk about in your book about, you know, the constant apologizing. And women, we're always doing this. Our likability factor, I think Sheryl Sandberg in her book Lean In talks about that too. Likability is a huge factor for us as women.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it is part of our training. And, you know, there's a kernel of truth in all this, that how we're socialized, because the fact is that we live in a society where we don't like men who act like women. We don't like women who act like men. So, you know, if a man cried at an earnings call, that would be a kiss of career death. Now, right? I mean, you can just picture it, can't you? So we don't like that, but we also don't like when women are as direct and straightforward as men. So my feeling is, we can't do it the way that men do it. We have to do it the way we expect women to do it. And there's a very simple trick to this, Janae, that we expect women to care about what other people think. Right? That's just kind of, we don't expect men to care
that way, right?
We don't expect men to care what other people think, but we expect women to care about what other people think. And so what I say to women, it's very simple. You can be direct and straightforward and then add a brief tagline that shows you care what other people think. So it might sound something like this. I believe we need to change our marketing strategy by the fourth quarter of this year, or we're going to lose a significant market share. Now, you can hear I feel strongly about this, yet I'd like to get everyone else's ideas on the table as well so we can put them together and move forward. Now, you can hear that combination is something that a woman has to do but a man doesn't have to do. And by adding that tagline, you can hear I feel strongly about this and I'd like to get everybody else's ideas on the table too. You've mitigated some of the, if I can call it, the bitch factor.
Yeah,
because
I'm totally fine with that. You are good. Let it fly.
Okay. Yeah. We've eliminated some of that because it mitigates it. And this is just something that a woman has to do. Now, a lot of times women will say to me, but it's not fair. It's not right. But and I say, look, I don't make the rules. I just report them.
Yeah. And it's true. I'll give you an example. I did an interview sometime last year with a gentleman that I know, and he was actually interviewing me for his within his business, and we were just having a good old time like we always do, and he was interviewing me, and I, like, obviously we're having fun. We already know each other. We have an established rapport. So me just having fun and being cheeky, because I also interview for a living, I said to him, well, I love your question, and that's great. And then I proposed the same question back to him because I was interested in knowing his thoughts. Well, what ends up happening is that after the interview, once the recording stopped, he started on this, well, I'm just too aggressive. And he was really like, oh, well, you're too aggressive. You're like this. You're like this. And all of a sudden, I was deemed like this man-hater, and I needed to take a program to become more likable to men.
Well, you know what
it
sounds like?
It was literally because of that turning point. And I knew this intuitively that he came back and he said, oh, this has never happened in the history of interviewing, that for some reason something's wrong with the interview. Can we record it again? So he literally wanted me to take the back seat in order. And I saw this, and I saw the manifestation from this. And I only went along with this because truly my purpose for doing this interview was to tap into his audience and share my story around business, love, and lifestyle. But it's interesting that the moment that a woman is as powerful and as assertive as a man, they don't like it. And also women may not even like it.
You know, you're right, and it sounds like what happened there was you assumed equality.
I assumed equality.
Yeah, because as you said, I'm an interviewer, I'm a smart woman, you know, all these things. I am equal to this guy. So as soon as you assumed equality, he had to put you back in your place, didn't he?
Yep, And that was exactly it. And then after that, I've been berated with, you need to take my training program to become more likable to men. Men and I get along great. We have a great rapport. I actually have wonderful men in my life, have dated wonderful men, married a wonderful man, you know, and it's just, I thought it was humorous. But that has nothing to do with me. At the end of the core of it, it really had nothing to do with me. It had to do with that person's insecurities.
Well, it does, but it's a cautionary tale for women listening, that when you assume equality with certain men, it's not all men, but obviously it's certain men, they're going to try to put you back in your place. And if you look at this on a grander scale, I mean, just look at this not in, you know, the micro, but in the macro. When you look at this more broadly, this is what's happening in society, that every time women assume equality, they get pushed back. And so Susan Faludi wrote about it in Backlash, right? That, you know, we take two steps forward and one step back, because this is what society does to us. A male-dominated society wants to maintain a male-dominated society. And so you're going to get pushback, and women need to be more like you. They can't let it put them back in their place. Like, you know, you approached it with some humor, like, you know, man, this guy's got to get a life. And I'd like to see more women do that.
Well, the reality is it's really owning yourself and truly operating from a place of understanding your intuition and knowing that what your gut is trying to say. Because a lot of times women would shy back and then they would be taken back and, oh, well, you know, maybe I am this way. I didn't even flinch because I knew that I wasn't that way, and I had definitely had reflections of men that were in my life that I had great relationships with, and great, even though I'm not married any longer, but even with my ex-husband, we ended our relationship with grace. There was no warring or anything like that, because at the end of it all, it's about doing what's in the best interest of our children, right? So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really on, it gives testament to how you operate as a person. It doesn't have, this is where you can build, I believe women can build likability factor. It's about doing things with grace. Doesn't mean that you can't get angry. Own your anger. Anger is a natural emotion if someone violates a certain piece of you, you know. And we've deemed it as, oh, well, anger is egotistical, and all of these things that we keep telling women. And women are inundated with all of the spiritual consciousness, well, fix yourself, fix yourself, fix yourself. And if you don't fix yourself, if you act this way, if you behave this way, then something's wrong with you. And then women are walking around with guilt. And it's not even just women. It's people in general are walking around with this level of guilt, right? But I think women feel it even more. And then they do take that into the boardroom with them. And they're not, as Sheryl Sandberg said, leaning in at the table. For me, I think I was assertive as I was because I wasn't really, from my corporate background, I didn't really have a choice to lean at the table. I was pretty much taken to the table by a lot of the men, and I had to be a part of the conversation. Being this very early 20s, just fresh out of school, insecure woman, not and being amongst men that were all upper level management, you know, and that were 45 plus is very intimidating. And then on top of that, I'm Afro-Canadian, so it was also being a person in management that was also out of a company of 10,000, the only person of diversity in an upper level management role. So
yeah, and that's always hard. But it sounds like you came to the table with a certain self-confidence that that you most likely developed, you know, because when they talk about self-confidence and leadership capability, you know, 75% of it is learned, 25% of it is innate. But going back to something that you said about the anger, I think this is very important, and I don't want to just kind of gloss over it, because it actually was the topic of my first book, Nice Girls. I'm so on Nice Girls these days. Women, Anger, and Depression: Strategies for Self-Empowerment. And in that book, I really talk about the fact that women are socialized not to get angry. That
yeah.
Men are allowed to get angry, but women aren't, because it's kind of too powerful. And the way that translates in the workplace is this whole thing about crying. And people often ask me about crying at work. And I say, hey, look, trying to teach a woman not to cry in the workplace is like trying to teach a pig to sing. It frustrates you and annoys the pig. We're kind of wired differently than men. And so crying, it's not such a bad thing to cry. But what you need to understand is that it comes from your anger, because if you can't express your anger, it's going to go somewhere. And for women,
exactly, it
goes into tears. And so rather, when you find yourself getting tearful, you need to ask yourself, what am I really angry about? And put words to it. And that turns it around.
And I'll give you two examples, okay? I'm full of examples today. I've actually cried. I've gone into my office, closed the door, and cried in my office. And I've also been confrontational with anger, okay? And ladies, I will share with you both of them. I had a situation where there's this man that was constantly trying to approach me in the workplace and was making me feel uncomfortable, and he was always issuing concern around certain things that really had nothing to do with him, and he thought it was being cutesy, and it was making me really uncomfortable. And I spoke to one of my colleagues about this, and I said to her, I'm uncomfortable with this dynamic. How can I approach this? Well, finally, I kept, and what most women do is this, we keep deterring, and we deter it, and we deter it, and we deter it. I'm a young person, right? So I'm not as refined yet in terms of my approach. But literally, I got to angry to the point of where I was confrontational, and after that, I was deemed, oh, well, Janae's unapproachable.
Right,
second,
right.
Second scenario was, you know, I was in a dynamic where I was working in an office in a position, and I was being sexually harassed by my superior. And having to do this, and the people in the office were well aware of this, and this was done public, like it was done openly in board meetings. You know, I've had situations with the gentleman where he was, he would stop the board meeting and ask me about my lipstick, and, you know, oh, well, what color lipstick is that? And then, you know, continue the meeting. And then even the men would say, well, really, what relevance does that have in the middle of the meeting, right? And then, you know, he would walk by and say, you know, touch my lips and lick his fingers and, oh, I know it tastes like chocolate. And there's all of these types of situations that did take place. And Lois, trust me, I have a whole book on these things that I can write. But I was very young, just fresh out of school, starting a new career, and in a place of, for a young woman, in a place of insecurity, because this is my first job. I actually got the job. Most of my peers are, like, that I finished university are still looking for schooling, right? So I actually got my dream job only to be confronted with this. And even the office staff, they all told me, you know, if you want to say something, you could. But I felt guilty, and I'm going to share my guilt with all of you ladies. His wife actually worked in the office and was the executive assistant. So she was aware of this, and she kept pleading with me every day, please don't press charges, please don't press charges. And in truthfulness, I just didn't have the confidence to do this, because all I saw was this woman who was had five children with this man that she was constantly arguing with, and she was aware of this. She knew that this is what he was doing, and this is how he was behaving. He was doing it right in front of her.
You can imagine what he was doing to her behind closed doors.
Exactly.
And
I
so she,
was left
she
feeling
abused.
Guilty. Exactly. And what I did was I resigned, because I was like, I don't want to ruin this woman's life, so it's easier for me to leave. I'm just starting my career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, no woman should have to make that kind of choice. And when you say you have a million of these examples, you know, I would hope you would put it in a book, because especially a book, because you mentioned that you're Afro-Canadian. I think especially for a book for women of color, I don't feel like there's enough books out there for women of color in that talks about these kinds of scenarios and how do you handle them. In Nice Girls Still Don't Get the Corner Office, I actually have a section on women of color. And I didn't include it in the first book because I wasn't brave enough to, because I was really afraid people would say, well, you know, who's she to talk about women of color? But
well,
as I But as I traveled around the world, from the stage, I would talk about the workplace playing field and how the playing field changes. There's different rules for men and women, but there's also different rules for women of color and Caucasian women. And when you got called, you know, angry or like, you know, she doesn't have a high likability factor, that often happens for black women, because they're called angry black women. And I see it happen all the time. And as a result, you know, you're left really holding the bag, because I can actually get a little angry and maybe get away with it. You can't. And it's not fair. It's not right. The playing field is narrower for you than for me. But I think that we need to make people aware of it so that we can widen the playing field for everybody.
Well, in the both examples that I did present to you, the one with the gentleman that kept asking, that I did become confrontational with, he was an actual Afro-Canadian man.
And Oh, really?
Yes, and he was Afro-Canadian, and my issue with that dynamic was he was hitting on me, a married man hitting on me. I'm young, okay, so I was probably around 21 at this point. And I just kept saying, like, why is this person so interested in what I'm doing? And it's not as if it's, you know, when you're trying to avoid, I'm avoiding this person. I don't even want to have conversation with this person. And this person keeps pursuing me and pursuing me to the point of where I become confrontational. In the second example that I gave to you, that gentleman was Caucasian, okay? And in that dynamic, I was still left very uncomfortable. I have numerous situations of sexual harassment. And one of the things that I even speak to women about is, and for women that do know me, I dress modestly. So it's not as if I wear clothing that's revealing. And meanwhile, that doesn't even matter. But it's just to show you that even it has nothing to do with the way a woman dresses. It really comes down to if people find you threatening, they seem to want to knock you down. That's what, from my experience, okay? Because in many of the scenarios that I was young, I dealt with ageism for most of my corporate career. And then also, because I did have a strong presence about myself, many people thought that I was the person that was in charge. So imagine if you're a man who is in charge and then someone's thinking that your assistant is the person in charge just because of how authoritative they are. It doesn't really create a great dynamic, right? So it doesn't create a great dynamic for that person.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But you know, what was so interesting to me also is that I did a study with a colleague of mine a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, and many of the things that you're talking about, I heard women saying things like, this is a woman in Miami, a Latina. She was an attorney in an immigration firm. And she said, my boss will come in and say things like, did your grandmother run out of yarn before she finished making that skirt if he thought it was too short? I mean, these kind of comments like, what is that lipstick? I know what it would taste like chocolate. I mean, these comments are totally inappropriate. And
oh,
yet,
totally.
And yet they're still happening to women. When people say to me, you know, but haven't women really come a long way? I say, we've come away. Part of the problem is much of this has gone underground. So people aren't doing it in front of other people. And so it's he said, she said.
And the one benefit that I did have is that these gentlemen were doing it in front of other people. But this is also what bothered me when I look back on it now, because obviously this is almost, I don't know, not to age myself, but, you know, it's almost like 15, 14 years later. Looking back at this, it's really, it was psychological abuse in a lot of aspects, right? Because they're taking advantage of somebody that they know is younger, right? And then there's also the humiliation factor because now there's an audience. Many times when people are sexually harassed, it's done in a one-on-one situation. So
right.
That way, it does become a he said, she said situation. That is what I found interesting in my dynamic is how brazen. And it was like almost challenging me or baiting me. That's what it came across. It was like some type of weird foreplay, if I could say that. It was weird to me that they actually thought, I don't know what it was with the process, but I still am baffled today about how brazen the incidences that I did have were public. For example, that the chocolate one upset you. The one with that when we went away on the business trip was more disturbing when we're on the plane and he switched spots on the plane to sit beside me and then fell asleep on my lap. Okay. Ugh. And then when we get to the when we actually got to the hotel and then everybody was going to the pool and I said I wasn't going into the pool and he's like, oh, that's too bad. I really wanted to see you in a bathing suit. You know, like these types of comments are just horrendous. These are things that should never, ever take place in a business setting at all.
No, and I think women don't quite know how to handle it.
Exactly.
And one of the things I say to women, you know, the first time it happens, handle it with humor. You know, say, you may be very flattering, but I'm very married. Or, you know, that's very flattering, but you're very married. You know, whatever it may be. But the longer it goes on, sometimes you do have to play, and I talk about this in Nice Girls Still Don't Get the Corner Office, sometimes you do have to play the gender card. Sometimes you do have to raise it to a level above you for your own self-respect. It rarely helps your career to do that, but it enhances your self-respect.
Agreed. This book, ladies, you should go out and pick this up. It is an amazing book. Lois, before we wrap up everything, what do you think are three of the biggest mistakes that you see women making in business, in corporate?
Okay, I think the first mistake is they don't understand that they're a brand, and therefore they're not building their brands. When you think about any brand name, we buy a brand name because it has perceived quality, because it's been vetted in focus groups, because it's well marketed, it has cachet. And when you think about those things, you want all of that associated with your brand. You need to understand that when you leave a room or you leave a meeting, people are going to say something about you. You can decide what you want them to say. And so you need to build your brand. In the case of your brand, a focus group is 360 feedback. You need to be getting feedback, and you need to respond to the feedback. And you don't need to be responding, but that's not true. We have a saying in coaching, if three people say you're drunk, lie down. So if you get feedback that's similar from a couple of places, you got to say, you know, there may be some veracity to this. So number one is to build your brand, and in the book I tell you how to do that. Number two is to play your game at the edge of the playing field. Women tend to play their games in the middle of the field, and that's not where games are won. Games are won at the edge. If you think about a tennis match, every tennis player wants to hit that ball to their opponent's far backhand corner without going out, because that's where the game is won. Same thing for you. You need to understand where are the boundaries of the playing field and how do I play my game at the edge. If you want to know where the edge of the field is, look at the winners in your workplace, because that's where they're playing their game. And then the third thing women do is they use too many words. The more words you use, you always soften your message. The fewer words you use, you strengthen your message. It's one of the reasons why I suggest women use a tagline if they don't want to get called a bitch, because it just softens the message a little bit without being indirect. But women use somewhere around 20,000 words a day. Men tend to use somewhere between 8 and 10. So when you think about that, we're using far too many words. In the book, I have a model that's called headline communication, and it's how you can communicate very succinctly, cogently, and with confidence. Those are my three things.
Brevity is key.
Yes.
So what do you think, how do you think women can overcome these unconscious behaviors? Because a lot of this, you have to admit, are things that, you know, there has to be steps to recovery from some of those mistakes, right? So
yeah.
How would you say that women should approach that?
Well, I think women, you know, even if they, and I'm not just trying to push the book. If you buy the book, there is a quiz in it that you can take that says, you know, it's a self-assessment. You have to assess yourself all the time. But you can also get that self-assessment online on my website at drloisfrankel.com. So if you go there, you can take the assessment for free. So it's not just that I'm trying to push the book. It's that I think women need to do a better job of assessing themselves and identifying what are the areas I can work on, and then just work on two or three things. A lot of times people buy the book and they say, oh, I do all 130 things in the book wrong. And I say, you know what? You can't be doing them all wrong. I know you're doing a lot right. So what you need to do is just focus on two or three things, because a lot of times you focus on those two or three things and then two or three things, other things change. So, you know, for example, I asked a tennis coach once, how do you get tennis players to play to their maximum level of performance? And she said exactly what I'm saying. You can't tell them to do 10 things differently because they can't focus on 10 things. But if you just tell them, you know what, you take your eye off the ball, keep your eye on the ball every single time, then other things change. Then all of a sudden you're bending your knees and you're bringing your racket back further. And I think that's what women need to understand. If you just speak with more brevity, you will find yourself more self-confident. And with that confidence, you may not put up with as much as the BS that comes your way.
You know, I did mention, and ladies, we're going to wrap up soon, but I did mention earlier on in our conversation, Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In. And I wanted to know, because a lot of people compare the both of you, and or compare your books. And I wanted to ask you, because I was actually out for lunch yesterday with a girlfriend, and her and I were talking about the book. And we both had the same take on the book. Meanwhile, loving the book, but we felt it was still coming from a very patriarchal place. Wanted to know what your thoughts were on Lean In.
Yeah. You know, my feeling is that when you're trying to get to the corner office, you don't lean in. That's what you do when you're there. My feeling is that, you know, the advice that Sheryl Sandberg has to offer is great advice. I think it's for more senior women. I think she wrote it from a place of privilege and power, and most women aren't there. My book, the difference between that book and my book is more prescriptive. It's going to help you get there. And then once you get there, you can lean in.
Okay. That's an interesting take. Okay, that's good. And I'm still reading your book, so as I will let you know what my journey is through your book as well.
I would love to know. I would love to stay in touch with you. You are just a dynamo, and I love it.
Thank you so much. Well, ladies, thank you so much, Lois Frankel, for being on Women's Movement Radio Show today. Ladies, go ahead and get Lois's book. You can find it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. It's online. Also, Lois, is there a website that you want to provide to the ladies?
Yeah, yes, my website is drloisfrankel.com, and I would love it if women would follow me on Twitter at Dr. Lois Frankel. I provide daily coaching tips, articles, news you can use.
Great. So, ladies, go out and get Nice Girls Still Don't Get the Corner Office. It's a great book. Great book to add to your collection. Before we leave, any last words of inspiration, Lois?
You know, the last thing I guess I would like women to think about is no one will ever take better care of you than you will take care of yourself. You need to step into your womanhood. You need to tell the little girl inside, I'm in charge now. I'll take really good care of us. And you need to be really in charge of your own life and not turn it over to other people, whether it's bosses, husbands, significant others, fathers, mothers, it's you. You create your own life, so you decide the direction you want to go.
Oh, that was wonderful. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to resonate on that today. Thank you so much, Lois, for being on a Women's Movement Radio Show.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Mom's Movement Radio Show on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. with me, your host, Janae Azenstrass, where we will talk to moms all around the world about business, love, and lifestyle. Join us and be a part of a movement of moms who are changing their lives by force.
Ladies, I'm so glad that Lois was on the show today. You know what? She actually allotted me the opportunity to share with all of you some of the stories from my previous corporate history. I hope that it empowers women that you don't have to suffer in silence. You don't necessarily have to do what I did. I was a young girl who had just graduated from college, entered into the workforce, and didn't really know where I was going in the direction I wanted to take in my career. So that is why I never said anything. Plus, on top of that, I was coming from a really insecure place. I was a broken person at that time, not knowing who I was and suffering from multiple different types of depression and not even realizing it. So that's why I made the decision that I made not to pursue, because I just didn't want to fight. And I had this very passive-aggressive attitude towards the entire dynamic. However, ladies, if you are listening, being harassed, sexually harassed in any type of format, bullied by a boss, whether male or female, it is unacceptable. And definitely seek out your HR department and legal advice to figure out how to deal with that. Ladies, on that note, I want to thank all of you for listening to Women's Movement Radio Show this week. I'm your host, Janae Azenstrass. Join me here on Tuesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And ladies, as you go out into your week, never forget, be informed, be inspired, be incredibly successful.